Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to Aboriginal elders emerging.
She had the three children and Scott was sitting in the front seat. He saw the gun come up and shot his mum in the back of the head. There's an expectation then that we need this to be solved, we need the community to be safe, so you take on board that pressure, then, you know, 13 years down the track, you're still going.
So we go to this job with the person on fire. They're in a gutter and they were writhing around and people were screaming, and I remember thinking, oh my God, because they were actually on fire. And I can't believe I did this, but I kneeled down next to them and I sort of grabbed the person's hand and I just sort of said, it's okay, I've got the ambos. And the person spoke to me. And I can remember when she spoke, I didn't know who it was. And I can always remember the teeth being so white. And the person said, Narelle.
These are the real voices of Australian true crime. Support us at patreon.com/austtruecrimepod. And leave us a review wherever you download your podcasts.
The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children.
When you're an informer, the people that handle you, your police officers, write up reports and your information goes in a blue folder. And that was in the drug squad offices. We don't know how that blue folder got out of those offices. But in the end, the blue file becomes far more significant because it is a far greater detail of what and exactly who he was informing on.
It's a double up this week. We have a brand new episode featuring Narelle Fraser, who is also working hard on a series of her own interviews called The Narelle Fraser Conversations, which can only be heard right here on Australian True Crime. Stay tuned for those in coming weeks. You can also see Narelle live in Melbourne on March 28, and there's a link in the show notes to this episode and on our Facebook page for more details. But on to this extra episode. Last week, we promised you an interview with Mandy Hodson, the daughter of Terry and Christine Hodson, whose unsolved murder still haunts Victoria Police as an organisation and several former members personally. Well, due to a development in Mandy's life, and I'm glad to say it's a positive development, Mandy is unable to join us this week. So we're joined instead by the journalist whose years of dogged persistence led in no small part to the exposure of Nicola Gobbo as Lawyer X, also known as Informer 3838. That revelation led to a royal commission which has uncovered a raft of secrets from Victoria Police's desperate fight against organised crime in the early 2000s. Our patrons can hear the interview in its entirety with all of its extra details, but here are some interesting highlights from a journalist who's been reporting on these stories as they happened for decades. I'm sure you'll find it brings a different perspective, shall we say, to Paul Dale's memory of events, as heard over the last 2 weeks. One of the big details that we never got around to, because there was so much to talk about, was the blue folder that went missing that night.
Mm-hmm.
Can you?
Well, yeah, that's what the allegation is, yep.
Can you talk us through that allegation, please? It's quite a key element that we never got to talk about.
So the blue folder does disappear, but, and I've asked Paul Dale about this, why does it apparently go missing that night? When you're an informer, the people that handle you, your police officers, and Terry Hodson was co-handled by Dale and Michel. They write up reports and your information goes supposed to go into a safe, and they kept part of his file, 31 of them, information reports, which can be quite lengthy, about his informing in a blue folder. And that was in the drug squad offices. And
everything he's ever told them about everyone else.
Well, at least part of it. But, yeah, it's supposed to be his folder. And it goes missing that night, apparently. And it definitely goes missing. And Paul Dale did go into the office after speaking to Dave Michel. But we don't know how that blue folder got out of those offices.
No, we don't.
There was a lot of people who would have probably had access to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are released into the wider underworld in February, October, November, December, January, February. They are out in February.
My God. Is it true that they were faxed around Australia to underworld figures from a fax machine at another Mockbell property?
Yeah, they were faxed from Tabor Stables, which was a horse stud, and they were faxed and they got to a bloke by the name of Mark Smith, who was living in Queensland at the time. He was an underworld figure that was known to Hodson. And so they've sort of, the allegation is basically they go from a Mockbell linked fax machine, basically, to Mark Smith in Queensland, and they get distributed widely after that.
Yikes, my heart's racing a little bit.
And
so
Terry had informed on quite a number of people, hadn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he was a prolific informer.
So Paul and Paul's team, I don't know how else to describe them, will say that, who cares? Everybody knew Terry Hodson was an informer.
Mm-hmm.
Terry was so blatant, and the way that the Victoria Police were using him was so careless that well before that, everybody knew Terry was an informer. Is that your understanding from your research?
Well, this is where it gets a bit complex.
Mm.
There was one sheet of Terry's informing already out there. Its name is IR44. And it got into the hands of Mockbell sometime earlier, but nothing happened. I mean, we're talking years. It sort of, Nicola Gobbo around about this point in time had also made inquiries of Dave Michel. This is a year before the burglary. It made inquiries about, you know, this informer number that kept coming up in court cases and in briefs of evidence. And she'd figured out that it was Terry Hodson, and her clients would have wanted to know who it was. So when she's asking these guys who were handling Terry, they would have known that it was getting around. And they actually changed his number. So that might sound a bit confusing, but in all of these secret little complex arrangements, his number was turning up in briefs of evidence. Say the Mockbells and other drug people of the time were seeking out, well, who's ratting us out?
Mm-hmm.
And they'd figured out it was him.
It's a pretty gossipy world, as we've established too. You would think Terry would know that it was out and about, wouldn't you?
I think his son, Andrew, yeah, who was a friend of Mockbell, was shown a copy of that. But in the end, the blue file becomes far more significant because it is a far greater detail of what and exactly who he was informing on. One sheet compared to 31 large sheets really was a significant part of the investigation into what happened to Terry Hodson. The situation that occurred and why this is such a significant crime is because not only Terry was killed, his wife was killed alongside him. And by the time they were killed, Terry had decided to inform upon his handlers. So he begins talking about Dave Mitchell and also Paul Dale as having organised this burglary. And this is where the story gets complicated, because who wants him dead? Who has a motive? Even Paul Dale says that he has a motive, but so does everyone who ever got that file.
Potentially 32 people, 33 people.
Oh, even
you
more.
Count the...
Yeah.
So,
And that's potentially why the blue file got out there as a smokescreen.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a suspicion.
I keep getting these mind drops each week when we think about this. I'm like, oh, something different to think about.
After the break, when did Anthony Dowsley start to suspect something was up with everyone's favourite lawyer, Nicola Gobbo? Coming up on Australian True Crime, the legal threats Anthony worked around for years to report these stories. But first, in 2010, Paul Dale was charged with commissioning the brutal murder of Terry and Christine Hodson, and Carl Williams, the police's only witness, was murdered in prison. What did Anthony Dowsley make of that?
When the murder case for the Hodson's murders, so you've got two people gunned down in their own home, and so then Carl's murdered, the case, the Hodson murder case just falls apart completely and suddenly no one can be charged for that. Is that when you start to feel like there's something weird going on?
Oh, yeah. I always thought there was weirdness going on from the moment that Nicola Gobbo decided to wear a wire.
Right.
And it's not that who she did it to. It's more that you don't find criminal lawyers who have responsibility to ethics and so forth doing something like that. It is against the grain. I don't sit here and say that she was necessarily Paul Dale's lawyer, but what I do say is it's a really odd move for a criminal barrister to wear a wire and become a witness because you're throwing your career away.
When did you get a vibe that you thought she might be acting in a similar way with people who were definitely her clients?
Well, there was always a closeness that you were aware of, but she's not on a Pat Malone with having a closeness to clients.
But when did you think she might be informing?
Well, it became more apparent when I was watching the court cases and how she sued. She sued Vic Pohl just before the trial was supposed to happen. The court hearings were happening in the murder trial over the Hodsons.
Carl started to catch on about 2006.
Yeah.
Carl and Roberta started sending official letters saying...
ethics board and all that sort of thing. Yeah, that's right. So, but that, no one knew about that. That was all done sort of privately. Okay. They're not open hearings. I had no clue that he was doing that. And they weren't that verbal about it. You know, I didn't hear about any of that until I started looking at this in 2014.
Don't you find that interesting? I had this image of Carl and Roberta Williams as really ostentatious.
Yes, I was thinking
and
that
outrageous.
Too.
And when I found out that they had actually taken this really formal route of complaint against Nicola Gobbo, quite quietly, I thought, oh, I didn't expect that. I expected they'd actually would be telling journalists and being really bolshy about it.
Well, I don't know about their outrage. What was occurring in 2006-7 was that Williams was dealing with his own murders in prison. Like, so he's in jail. He's charged with a series of murders, and he is realizing that his some of his associates are rolling, and he realizes that Nicola Gobbo has acted for him and acted for them. So he's at least cluey enough to work that out.
Yeah. She's also visiting people she's not acting for.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're rolling. That's when he starts to really Jerry.
Well, he's also before he was actually arrested, he was trying to make sure that people that could inform on him would not.
Mm.
So he wanted people to be staunch and be loyal. But, you know, some of those people had grievances.
Paul Dale asserts that one of the big problems that he's had is the media machine that is Vic Pohl's media unit, and that journalists will always err on the side of Vic Pohl because they rely on being in good with the media unit because they need you, need to be able to get cooperation from the media unit, to get tips and all that kind of stuff. And so that if you report negatively about them, you'll get on the outs with them and you won't get the stories. Now, if anyone maybe would run the risk of being on the outs because you seem to have written some stories, you know, you're writing the truth of what's happened and what is happening and what's happening in the Royal Commission and all that kind of stuff. So what do you think about his assertion that journalists have to write whatever Victoria Police tell them to write? And if they say, shit can Paul Dale, that's what you'll do.
He's running an argument that VicPol have power because they have information. That's an argument. They do have information. They have great stories. They are the ones that investigate cold cases. They are the ones that investigate high-level crimes, interesting crimes, Mockbell and the like. A lot of journalists have chased after good police contacts.
Yeah.
And that is true. But for him to run an argument that VicPol have been basically calling in journalists and trying to get them to run stories about Paul Dale and David Michel and Terry Hodson and their deaths, those stories are going to be written about whether police speak to us or not. The stories that I've written about Paul Dale and about VicPol, generally they don't like, because some would say that they sparked the Royal Commission into police conduct.
I would absolutely say that, yes.
Which has given someone like Paul an ability to tote what he wants to tote out there. And that is that he's now saying he's the victim of some incredibly large conspiracy to frame him, and that there's no evidence against him. But the fact of the matter is that evidence has never truly been fleshed out in a court of law.
Well, what he said to us, in fact, the first thing he said to us is that the Royal Commission proves everything he's ever said.
Well, that's completely incorrect.
I love that conviction. You said it.
You're laughing.
I laughed at him when he said it. I said, I wouldn't go that far, mate.
No.
And he said, oh, all right. But he says it with such conviction. He really believes that the entire Royal Commission has proven everything he's ever said.
No, it hasn't tackled that. It has not tackled the allegations in a robust way. Mm. And it's not there to do that. That's what people need to understand. It is there to identify a small area of this within their terms of reference, which is, do police use people with professional responsibilities and confidences and privilege, and what effect did it have? Mm. Not did Paul Dale or anyone else commit the Hodson murders. That's not what they're there to do, because I'd love to know.
The lack of inquest into Carl Williams' death is...
Yep.
He can be whoever he is, but yep. The fact is it's outrageous. The circumstances around his death have never been investigated through an inquest, right.
You don't have to like Carl Williams.
Yeah.
And you can't, you don't have to agree with anything he did in life. I mean, you know, here's the facts. He orchestrated killings. He was a prolific drug dealer, and he headed a criminal gang. That is a point very separate to should a person who's killed with a piece of exercise bike, a stem of exercise bike, and it takes 27 minutes to find him after having cardiac arrest in the most secure unit while in the situation and circumstances that he is in and cooperating with police, should you have a result to what really happened? Should you investigate what really happened? Of course you should. There were listening devices, they said dormant, all over that cell. What are they listening to, or what were they listening to before they switched them off?
Does not pass the pub test.
It's extraordinary stuff. Mm. What else was going on? I mean, Nicola was allowed to basically go in and out of the prison and visit whoever she wanted, and it was almost not on record. I mean, it was just extraordinary stuff in a secure location.
I believe she's suing again.
Yeah, she'll sue. She's trying to sue again.
She's getting a lot of money.
Well, a lot of people are. I mean, I've heard from a number of people in the last week or so that they are hopeful that their particular settlements that they've been chasing for 10, 15 years will soon be settled. How much money do you think? I mean, I guess it's like how long's a piece of string, but this is actually going to cost a lot of money, right?
Mm. There are a lot of people who have been notified that their cases may have been tainted. The Royal Commission came up with a number initially of 1,297 people that they've identified. I think that's just everybody in the period she was informing that may have used her services. That doesn't mean their cases were tainted. I'm not sure why that figure was put out, but it's they've identified that many people. It's probably just everyone she ever acted for. But
we've had one murder conviction overturned and now so many other people launching appeals or whatever.
Yeah, and the murder conviction was overturned because of Nicola's conduct and the police doing something about the information she gave them, which was to basically turn the courtroom into a bit of a nothing, really. It was she prompted up a witness against her own client. I mean, that's just the stuff of movies. You just don't see that happening, and I've never heard of it. Actually telling the police to get the Crown witness against your client to sort of, you know, be staunch and keep going.
We were talking about her particular circumstances. She's got children. She's declined witness protection. What's your take on that? Because as you said, it's a pretty risky kind of proposition when you're a mother. Your life potentially could be in danger because of your activities.
Yep, there's a few suppression orders around this area. But I think it's fair to say that Nicola's never wanted to agree to go into witness security, even though police spoke to her at length about it on several different occasions. She seeks protection and she seeks money, finance, to keep her lifestyle going, but she will not go. She's defiant that she will not go into any kind of police program because she says she doesn't trust them.
And she can probably afford better protection by suing them.
That's true.
Than what they would give her.
Well, she sued them once so she could sue them again.
Yeah, and I reckon she'll get a lot more this time. She got $3 million last time.
2.88, yeah.
It seems like peanuts compared to what she'll get this time, frankly.
Well, she went for $20 million last time.
Yeah. I reckon she'll get it this time.
Will she?
Don't you reckon?
Well, what's her point?
Is she pushing her luck too much?
I think her point this time is that this time it does feel like she has made an argument for victimisation. She's had a stroke. They're still pushing her.
They didn't push her.
Well, they allowed
her informing in being registered comes quite some time after a stroke.
Well, it comes before and after, though.
Well, she's thrilling to inform. She's attempting to inform in very short stints and failures all the way up to 2005 when her official. So there's three stints, but the big stint is from 2005 to 2009. That's when she sort of gives them the pay dirt they want. But she wants to sue them for her decision to inform on her own clients, and she was trying to inform not only on her own clients but the people she worked for, her bosses, from the time from before, well, she even got a law degree. So she's a student. She's trying to inform. She's lied to get in. Downplayed what happened with a drug bust that she had in 1993.
She never would have been approved to become admitted to the bar if she'd been transparent about that, would she?
Well, her affidavit that she made to the board was not entirely truthful. She then spends a bit of time working. She has relationships with, you know, she chats to police in powerful positions. One was Wayne Strawn, who ends up being a cop himself. And she just gets passed along the line until she's playing both sides. While she's willing to, you know, drink and socialise and inform to the police, she's doing similar things, passing the information back to the criminals, and she's socialising and you know, all forms of socialising. And it's just going backwards and forwards. It's not a one-way street. If people think this is one street, it's not. It's going every which way, and she's just in the middle of everything, and she just loves to go to the next person, accumulate information, and no matter who the next person is, she'll give them something. And that's what happened with Hodson as well.
How does Andrew Rule put it? What is it, running with the hares and hunting with the hounds?
Yeah, something like that.
How long was the process of trying to working with the lawyers for News Corp?
Yeah, you broke this story back when you couldn't name her, when the front page of the Herald Sun was this black page that just said Lawyer X.
Well, it was some research, so it just didn't go straight to press. And I wrote up a bit of a draft, and then I thought this could get out. There was something about it I thought could get out. So we actually got one story out, and we could have named her. We could have named Nicola in that story, but we chose not to because we were very, I called Vic Vic Pohl up, Victoria Police up, and I was very concerned. Obviously, it's not every day you name an informer, and you don't name an informer unless you've got a really good reason to.
Yeah.
It's because it's just danger. You just don't do it. And the reason was is there was a true public interest, as has been pointed out by everything that's happened since the Royal Commission and so forth. But we decided not to name her. I rang police. I rang her, and we printed one story. But on that night, before the story, while the story was going to press, we called the Supreme Court because I had told them what I was doing.
And so they thought, she was not, obviously not in hiding. She was still in Melbourne?
She was in Melbourne. She was, you know, living as normal.
Wow, okay.
And so what happened is our lawyers had to meet their lawyers, and they did a bit of a deal outside the Supreme Court to basically erase some of the article and leave some as is, because we were going to have to poll petitions. And they didn't, there was costs and things that they just wanted to nut it out. So we got rid of some information, and it was a bit frustrating because I had planned to do a larger piece to begin with and get it all out, but we couldn't. And then we continued to work on it. We did a story or two, but then an injunction came, another one came in, because we had, I had so much material. I was just going to roll it out day after day. And we were injuncted, and we couldn't run a story. So we had to write an editorial. And, you know, we put that big X on the front page. And then what happened from there is that because the suppressions keep coming one after the other and were injuncted, I had to find ways to write about it, but be very careful in how we wrote it. And that's what happened for the next 4 years, 5 years.
Wow, that's amazing. Until ultimately the injunction was dropped in, was it December 2018?
November 2018 is when the High Court made its decision, and we were allowed to publish in December. December the 3rd, and that's the day they called the Royal Commission.
How did that feel? It must have been pretty exciting and gratifying. Is it all that hard work and just, were you a bit scared as well?
Just adrenaline and relief in some ways, because I thought it was justified that the government would act like that. I don't think they would have wanted to.
No, I don't think so.
And a lot had gone on in those years to shut it all down. And that was what the fight was. We got, I think I got numerous letters from Victoria Police's lawyers, which are the government lawyers. I think there was more than a dozen, saying that you could be prosecuted. And I had to sort of find ways to tell the story without breaching suppression orders. And what was going on behind the scenes and in secret, there were people, prisoners, basically, coming forward. One was Rob Karam. He's involved in the importation of 15 million ecstasy pills and tomato tins.
The famous tomato tins.
Yeah. So what was I doing in those 5 years? I was looking at all the different cases, one being tomato tins, others being what happened to Williams, others Mockbell, all of the different killings, all the clients, all of the court cases, what had happened, had her name come up, things like that, all little pieces of the puzzle.
Did you have like a big board like on the movie?
I was just thinking
the pins and the all the strings, photos. All the photos.
No, no, we didn't have any of that.
Would you do just a manila folder with you?
I can't remember.
Because you know when they make the movie, you will have had a big board.
Oh, yeah.
With all the photos.
No, there was no
up.
Board. I just had at a desk. I don't know if you're aware of this, but journalists are being made redundant these days.
Yes.
And there was a floor empty. So there's barely any furniture. Yeah. It was like a ghost town. And I thought, oh, this is the last thing I'll ever do. We were in this unusual situation where we sat in an old boardroom together typing away, yeah, getting this sort of online thing ready to go if it happened to ever happen that the story could be told.
Wow.
So we put together, you know, 20, 30,000 words that just sat nowhere for, I don't know, a year. Yeah.
I know that system a bit, having worked at LEADER. I'm hoping no one accidentally publishes it or something. I remember doing the training.
God.
So it was so when it came about, I was just really interested because it wasn't so much, I've done it or any strange feeling. It was more, I'll finally know for sure the detail of what I've been looking at because the Royal Commission will get to it.
It must be very gratifying, and it's a really good example of just doggedly pursuing a story, because it is, you know, with the landscape as it is now, it's hard to be a journalist, and it's really important.
Well, it's amazing what actually is going on.
Mm.
I've been amazed by the Royal Commission. I mean, sometimes I know what's coming, mm-hmm, because I spent so long looking at it, but The level of detail and what actually happened still amazes me.
What surprised you then? What's some of the things that have surprised you coming out of it?
Just the amount of people that knew, the levels it got up to, that no legal advice from Victoria Police was ever sought until 2011.
Look, I think there's a little bit of unfairness from us as the public in forgetting the pressure that was on at the time.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Because we applied a lot of pressure to police and a lot of pressure politically to make it end. And so it's unsurprising, really, that people started applying these ridiculous policies and outrageous measures.
Yep.
And the checks and balances started to dissipate?
Yeah. I can see what had happened. You've got informers ending up, you know, in murder victims.
Yep. And, you know, I think when Jason Moran was murdered at Auskick, I think that was a massive turning point where the community said, enough, this is out of control. And the politicians were saying, do something, do anything.
Yeah. Stop it. Yeah. But and that's all correct. And they set up different ways to handle informers within police, which was apparently, they would write more down. It wasn't as ad hoc as it used to be. And that's all well-intentioned. But just to counter that, there were moments when the light bulb went off and they're in situations where they know that they are involved in something that they don't want to be happening.
Oh, the number of people who said, there's going to be a Royal Commission about
we're
this.
We're in trouble here.
Yeah.
And but because she was thrilling to informing so much, that it's almost like, and these aren't my words, these are their own words. This is Simon Overland's own words. It was like we were addicted to her.
Yeah.
Or addicted to it, addicted to her informing. She was just so thrilled to inform everything she knew to them. That it just too hard to resist,
and she's admitted it as well. Mm. You know, she's admitted it was pathetic.
Mm.
I was addicted to the thrill of the acceptance, and the I wanted people to think well of me, and
and she's probably changed a bit since she became a mum and she had her health battles. But do you think people were immobilised? People in positions of authority and influence were immobilised by not knowing what to do or being scared of the consequences?
Absolutely, because by becoming involved in this unsavoury kind of muddle, people's jobs are on the line. They realise, have we perverted the course of justice? Have we done this? Are we in trouble? Big careers are on the line. It's not every day. Everybody has said that when they learnt, including Simon Overland, when they learnt that she was about to inform them, they thought that was problematic. And they were right.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Thank you.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime, made in partnership with the Acast Creator Network. Don't forget the whole interview can be heard by our wonderful patrons like Raylene Creed, Alison Baker, Katie Douglas, Kate Breton, Ilana Lamont, and Marie Brighton, and Marie Brighton, and Marie Bryant. Got there. We'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.